Our Bible chapter this morning is taken from St. Matthew, chapter 5, beginning with verse 33. Again you have heard that it hath been said by them of old time, Thou shalt not forswear thyself, but shalt perform unto the Lord thine oaths. But I say unto you, swear not at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by earth, for it is his footstool, neither by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great King. Neither shalt thou swear by thy head, because thou canst not make one hair white or black. But let your communication be, yea, yea, nay, nay. For whatsoever is more than these cometh of evil. You have heard that it hath been said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say unto you that ye resist not evil. But whosoever shall smite thee on thy right cheek, turn to him the other also. And if any man will sue thee at the law and take away thy coat, let him have thy cloak also. And whosoever shall compel thee to go a mile, go with him twain. Give to him that asketh thee, and from him that would borrow of thee turn not thou away. Ye have heard that it hath been said, Thou shalt love thy neighbor and hate thine enemy. But I say unto you, love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you, that ye may be the children of your Father which is in heaven. For he maketh his sun to rise on the evil and on the good, and sendeth rain on the just and on the unjust. For if ye love them which love you, what reward have ye? Do not even the publicans the same? And if ye salute your brethren only, what do ye more than others? Do not even publicans do so? Be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father which is in heaven is perfect. And I would like to read to you a chapter out of the prophet about joy and sorrow. Then a woman said, Speak to us of joy and sorrow. And he answered, Your joy is your sorrow unmasked. And the self-same well from which your laughter rises was oftentimes filled with your tears. And how else can it be? The deeper that sorrow carves into your being, the more joy you can contain. Is not the cup that holds your wine the very cup that was burned in the potter's oven? And is not the lute that soothes your spirit the very wood that was hollowed with knives? When you rejoice, look deep into your heart. And you shall find it is only that which has given you sorrow that is giving you joy. When you are sorrowful, look again in your heart, and you shall see that in truth you are weeping for that which has been your delight. Some of you say, Joy is greater than sorrow. And others say, Nay, sorrow is the greater. But I say unto you, they are inseparable. Together they come, and when one sits alone with you at your board, remember that the other is asleep upon your bed. Verily you are suspended like scales between your sorrow and your joy. Only when you are empty are you at standstill and balanced. When the treasure keeper lifts you to weigh his gold and his silver, needs must your joy or your sorrow rise or fall. I've chosen for the subject of my sermon this morning, Be Perfect, Even as Your Father in Heaven, which is perfect. Now that's quite a thing, isn't it? How can you be as perfect as God? The reason you can is because you are He, right now, this very moment, because there is nothing in this universe but God. Any place you look, of any individual, there stands before you, there is before you, God Himself. He is both form in the form, and He is formless. Because you see, He created all things, and nothing was created except by Him. So where is He not? You cannot possibly say that there is one tiny speck in this whole universe, one atom of space, one form that walks the earth in which God is not. We are He. Now, as all of us think of God, we do not think of imperfections in Him. We think of Him as being totally perfect. He is wonderful. He is beautiful. He is filled with light. He is all sympathy, all compassion. He is all love. He is an infinite storehouse of abundance from which He opens wide His doors, and He showers upon us, His children, all of the good things of His kingdom. Now, if we work in harmony with His laws, this means the kingdom of earth as well as the kingdom of heaven. But seemingly, we as human beings in our human conscious state are always looking for the things of the earth. We want everything to make us feel good. If we have an enemy, right away we hate them. And we should not have said so here. In the Old Testament, which covers man in his human state of consciousness, the tendency always is to strike back, really to take an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. They have hurt you, so hurt them back. But this is not the way of the divine, because Christ Himself said that you should turn the other cheek 7 times 70. That's an awful lot of times. That's 490 times, is it not? 7 times 70. And then turn once more, just for good measure. Everything that comes to you in this life is given to you but for one purpose, and that is that you may overcome your little self and find your greater self, which is God within you. You are that life. You are that love. You are that wondrous presence which is within every single human being. That is the spirit within you, the life within you. It is that which makes you move and live and breathe and have your being. But you are so engrossed in the things of the senses. You are so engrossed with your poor little ego that gets hurt or downtrodden or put upon in some way that you never realize who and what you really are. Everything that comes to you is but for the purpose of making you realize who you really are, your true identity, which is God Himself, in this form which He has made, this temple made without hands. When you stop to think of that, what a tremendous statement that is, then you start to realize how far down you have fallen, how greatly you have been walking in darkness and in ignorance. Because truly, this ego that feels put upon, imposed upon, that feels sorry for itself, is pure delusion. It doesn't exist in reality whatsoever. Not at all. You have taken this, and it acts like a black cloud in your mind. It covers all the light within you. It takes away from you your joy and your happiness. It is only like it says in the Bible, when neither joy nor sorrow can affect you, you are at standstill, in perfect balance, empty of everything but your true self, that you really are what you should be. And then you come out of this a totally free person. You will react, but you will only react because you are playing a part on God's stage of life. And that reaction is not for yourself nor from yourself, but from God within you in order to teach, to deal with whoever stands before you. Because you are but the mirror which reflects that one who stands before you in all things. You are totally unaffected inside. You are at peace. You have the bliss of God. And this is the miracle of it. This is the miracle of it, that you can put on such an act, such a show. You can register anger, you can register joy, you can register deep stillness, you can register anything and everything, and yet always and forever you are one with God, and you know it. We all are, but how many realize it? How many are truly aware of it? It says in here, if somebody wants you to walk a mile with them, walk 20 or 2 miles. In other words, if they want you to go a little way, go all the way. I am that way with everyone who comes before me. All I ask is they start in to come a little way on the path of God. I will go all the way with them, every bit of it. But they have to do their part. The guru has the responsibility of teaching the truth, of being the example of that truth, of living that truth. But the disciple has an equal responsibility of taking that truth and applying it within their own lives. Because if they do not do so, they cannot blame the guru nor anyone else but themselves. Because they, and they alone, have failed to measure up. God realization is the pearl of great price. That means the total, and I mean the word total, annihilation of your human ego. Does that make you a nothing? No, it makes this nebulous, delusive self nothing, which in truth it is. And it makes you the everythingness of God. Just think. God is everything. And so when you are one with Him, you are never bored, you are never dulled. You are always and forever excited, because this spiritual life is not a thing that you go around wearing sackcloth and ashes about, with a long, pious face, with your eyes down, afraid to look up. It means that you are one with everything in this universe, that you are living the most exciting, the most fulfilled, the most interesting, fascinating life that anyone can live. Believe me, I know. Last night I didn't have but half hour sleep if I had that. And look at the power of God that's coming forth from me. You think that I can do this? He does it through me, because I am totally and absolutely surrendered to Him. I take many things. I take insults. People spit upon me. They revile me. They do this. They do that. I couldn't care less. They don't hurt me, because I refuse to accept it. And everything that comes, which is seemingly a failure in my life, is a foundation for a new success. It is something which is God's will. And so if I am totally surrendered to Him, I accept His will not only in one or two things that please me, but I accept His will in all things, because I know above everything else that my Father does every God-blessed thing for my highest good. And I am but given a lesson to learn. I have the realization of my oneness with God. But my life doesn't end because I have that. I don't sit in a never-never land. I'm not sitting up in a pink cloud with angel wings playing a harp. Like Master said, all the Christians think of this as being heaven, that you go up to heaven, you're like an angel sitting on a pink cloud playing a harp and singing hymns. He said, my God, how boring. And I agree. To me, life is exciting. But you know, you have to go beyond all of this excitement into the stillness of your own soul. All of us have too much activity in the Western world. We are like Mary and Martha. That's the parable that's written in the Bible about the overactive person and the person who wants to worship. Mary was the one who anointed Jesus before His crucifixion. She was the one who wanted to sit at His feet, and He said she did a good thing. But Martha said, Master, what about all these things to be done out here? Are they not to come with equal consideration? But He chose the one who went into the silence of her own soul. He chose the one who served Him spiritually as being the better of the two. Now, both are necessary equally, because as long as you maintain a human body, you have to function consciously in this world. You have to meet these two forces of good and evil, so-called, the forces of opposites. But you have to learn to be unaffected by either one of them. Because don't forget that nobody can hurt you unless you give them permission to do so through your own acceptance of it. Anybody can hand you anything, but if you refuse to take it, it returns to them. And what they wanted to send to you will react on them as individuals. They build their own fire. They build their own crucifixion. Nobody gives it to them. Now, you say, but why didn't you take it? Why did you make them suffer? But did it not? And I'm not refusing what is theirs. Why should you take on such things? It is not necessary. You should give good for evil, but above both good and evil, if you give from your God self to everybody, this is the greatest thing that you can do, regardless of what anybody says, thinks, or does to me or about me. I give them divine love. And all I need is one small toehold, one little glimmer of life, and I'm right in there pitching again. I don't care what they do. I have but one concern, one desire, to do the will of my Father, and it is His will that every single one of His errant children return to Him, or rather realize that they are already one with Him. There is truly no going nor coming out. This is all a product of the mind. Everything about it. You know, we build such tremendous ideas about things. We have to have this one's love. We have to have this. We have to have that. We have to have success. We don't want failure. But we're living in a world of opposites. So we have to learn to live in it and not be affected by it. And until we can do that, we are never going to be at peace. We will never be successes. I don't care how much worldly wealth you have. I don't care how great your success is as an artist in any field. I don't care how famous you are. If you are not master of yourself and your emotions, you are a miserable failure, and you will remain so for the rest of your life. We're in this business to learn self-control, self-mastery, in order that we may truly live and not exist like worms in the dust, just floated around like a leaf in the breeze, the flotsam and jetsam. We are here but for this purpose, to realize who we are, to become the radiant, joyful children of God. And when we put Him first above ourselves, and this is quite a thing, you say, oh, but if all the time we hear this, there are no buts and ifs in God. You've got to give it all up for Him. You can't keep one God-blessed thing for yourself, because you've got to learn that you must love Him and place Him first above yourself, because in truth you don't exist, not this you that you think is so great. This one who sits on the throne of God, telling himself he is God. And it says that this day of realization will not come until there come a falling away first, and that evil one be exposed, and that evil one is this human ego, this human consciousness, which has no existence in truth. This idea of separation, this idea of the great fall, which came so that man is thinking constantly and being told constantly that he is living in a state of sin, he's born in a state of sin, it has to go. The only sin in this whole world is the idea of separation from God. And if you know this moment that you are God's child, which in truth you are, how could you be otherwise? All the rest of the things will fall away from you, and you will find that treasure within your own heart. You will find that light within yourself. There is a story told in India about Shiva and Parvati. Shiva is the third person of the Hindu Trinity. And it is said that Shiva is always in meditation, always in samadhi or ecstasy of God. So Parvati wanted to also participate in this. So one day she said to Shiva, "You must take me into samadhi so that I may know the experience for myself." So he said, "All right, sit down." And he prescribed the proper meditative posture. So Parvati sat down. He said, "All right, now what do you see?" "Lord, I see thy form before my vision." He said, "Go deeper still. Now what do you see?" "I see light everywhere," he said. "Right? What is your experience now?" "I hear the great sound of Om, the universal word." He said, "Go beyond even that. Now tell me what you see." But there was only silence, because Parvati had gone beyond all duality. in the silence of her home be. And when she came out of it, all that could be heard from her was, I am Brahman, I am Brahman, I am the Supreme Lord. She had found her oneness with him. There's another story told in India that tells of the fleetingness of the human emotions. There was a devotee once who went to a master for training. The master was training him in many things in life, because you see, you must train a devotee in every phase of their existence, not just in the spiritual field alone, but physically, mentally, emotionally. Everything fits into the whole man. And so he told the saint that all of his family adored him. They loved him. And he felt such comfort in this. Well, the saint knew better. So he said, all right, you keep telling me this all the time. He said, I'm going to ask you to put it to a test. He said, I want you to go home, and I want you to pretend that you're sick, and I'm going to give you a small pill which will make you as one dead, but you can hear everything that's going on. So the man agreed to this. He went home. He complained that he was ill, and he took the pill, and before long, there he was, lying on the bed just as though he were dead. All the relatives started wailing, his mother, his father, his wife, his children, all. They had lost their dear one. This was terrible. So the saint made it his business to come along just about that time, and he said, well, would you like him back? Oh, we would do anything to get him back. So he said to the devotee's mother, you are very old. Why do you not give your life for your son? If you give your life, he can be brought back to life. Oh, how can I do this? What will all my other sons do for me? She said, do without me. I cannot do this. So he said, well, you being a good loving wife, why do you not give your life for your son? But my children, what would they do without me? She said, besides, I am content. I must accept my lot as a widow. And the children, they were just starting out in life. They said, we have all life before us, so we cannot do such a thing. Let the dead be dead. We mourn him, but let him be dead. So the man, hearing all of this, realized how he had put all of his faith in something which really didn't exist. And he jumped up to his feet and he confronted them. And he told them what he thought of their love. And he said to the saint, I see what you mean. I shall leave my home, my family, and I shall follow you, because you alone have given me true love. And so it is with every true saint. With the guru who is really a guru, who has the realization of God. To them, all are their children, and yet they are the child and the servant of all. And they are willing to give of themselves, to spend on themselves, to the last breath of life, to the last speck of energy, not for themselves, but for you, in order that you may realize and attain for yourself that eternal joy, that eternal realization of your real self. As I told you before, God is not a stranger. He is not somebody outside of yourself, although he is equally present everywhere. He is that self which you call I am inside of you. God within you. How wonderful that is. This is a realization which must come to every individual. That's the sole purpose for which he has put on this earth. All of the other things that we take interest in, all of the other gifts which he has endowed us with, are given to us but for one purpose, in order that the experiences which come to us through living these things, expressing these things, may teach us the lessons necessary to be learned, so that one time, one day, we will see this great light of our own soul, and we will feel the bliss of his eternal presence. We will be lifted up, and we will know who and what we are. And we will be able to see and to say, as they do in the East, blessed spirit, I am he. What a tremendous experience that is. The bliss that permeates you far exceeds anything that you get on a drug trip. anything that you get in alcohol. Because this is an earned thing and it's permanent. It is not destructive. You are not destroying your soul with. You are getting the nectar of spirit. You are partaking of the bounty of God's bliss. You are filled with it, and you become a power and a light for Him. And you walk the earth, and people feel this magnetism in you. They feel the power of God. You look like any other human being. You do not wear a placard across your chest saying, "I am God realized." You do not wear a pair of horns indicating that there's something special here. You walk the earth like anyone else, but nobody knows what's inside. Such a one tests people in many ways because they are working totally at God's direction. And it is a tremendous thing when God goes on a fishing expedition what He comes up with sometimes, because we have this surface thing on the outside, this cloak that we wear. It says in here, if somebody takes you to law and wants your coat, give them your cloak also. That's rather a strange thing to say. It makes you wonder, what does it mean? The law wants your coat, so give them your cloak also. They might want something that you have in the outer sense, but you wear a cloak. You will wear a mask over your face. In the dual sense, we are all Janus-faced gods. Two sides to our face. Who and what we really are inside, in that beautiful smiling self that we want to put out to the world so that they will think we are just great and pat us on the back so that this poor little ego can bask in the sunshine of all the praise and all the glory that is given to us. But if you give them your cloak as well as your coat, you stand revealed your true self before them. What is that true self like? Is it this true ego, which is not very nice to look at, which is hurt and abused and feels pity for itself? Or is it that radiant, beautiful, blissful God self that is put before the world? These are the things that we have to think about. When we have enemies, we must give them love. We must be at special pains to overcome any reaction, any feeling within ourselves as an example to them of true godlike living, true Christian living, if you will, or Krishna living, if you're in the East. It's all one and the same, because Krishna means the Christ. It means that eternal consciousness of God, that first begotten which came out of the bosom of God and expressed itself in all the universe. And if each one's consciousness is lifted up to that state of Christ consciousness, then they too can be the Christed One, the Son of God, heir with Christ in every way. Every now and then you find some great one, like Jesus the Christ, the Avatar, like Krishna, like Buddha, like Zoroaster, like Muhammad, like Confucius, and many others. These men are brought out, and they are the supreme teachers. The ones who have put God before themselves, who have gone all the way, and they have become a light unto the world. And even after they have left the body, they have not died, because the Spirit of God which inhabits the body still continues to live. Otherwise, God would not be infinite, He would not be eternal. God would die. You remember when there was such a furor several years back about, is God dead or God is dead? God can never die. The form which encases Him may drop away. It may disintegrate. But that eternal spirit which was within it will again take the dust from the earth and fashion a new form and live in it, so that your consciousness never dies. You, the real you, never die, so there should be no fear of death. You take off your outer garment. You hang it up, you have a real deep sleep, and then you awaken to a new dawn and a new day with a new opportunity. A new garment of freshman is put on. And it is up to you what you make of it. You can put all your attention on worldly things. You can make yourself great. You can react to praise. Or you can do all of these things and be great in God with it. It is not that you do away with these things, because it is through the gifts which he gives us that we express his wonder, his beauty, his power, his ingenuity, his fascinating being. It's tremendous if you're an artist, if you're an actress, if you're a singer, if you're a writer or a ditch digger or what, if you do it for God, knowing that every single thing you do is for him. It is the most tremendous experience in your life. And he will reward you greatly. He will make you a thing of joy, a person of joy, to create joy for millions. I'm not advocating that you hide your head in the sand like an ostrich. I am advocating that you learn who and what you are and what your life really is and what it should be. What you can make of it. Do you do it only for your own selfish self? Or do you do it for him? And when you do it only for him, do you not serve yourself? And believe me, when you do, every door is open to you. Every door. And even when some are closed, you have found that eternal peace, that eternal joy, that eternal calmness which nobody and nothing can shake within yourself. And you are totally unaffected in the midst of turmoil. Remember that there are many who try to increase their own stature by cutting off the heads of others. These are the ones who are constantly, I hate this one, I don't like this one, this one did this to me, I feel terrible about it. Look at, poor me, poor me, poor me. Poor martyrs. It's a terrible thing, isn't it? These people deserve your pity. They need your love. They need your understanding because they're sick when they do things like that. Don't react in the same way, because hate begets hate. But love always begets love. And if you give them not human love, but divine love from within yourself, this love is imperishable. And you keep on and on and on, no matter what they do to you, what they give to you. And believe me, eventually that has to change, because the love of God is the greatest power in the world. There is no power in the world like it. And it has to bend. It will melt anything that comes before it if you keep at it long enough. And what do? You expend a little effort, but finally it becomes effortless. And you do it just like water flows in a stream toward the ocean. It is beautiful, it is wonderful. And no matter what you have to take, if you do, when you can see the change that is made in the lives of those whom you have tried to help, you see the harvest come. It is worth anything and everything you ever had to pay for. And in truth, you can say to God, Lord, how is it that you have asked of me so little when you have given me so much? This is the way God works. We are each and every one of us his beloved children. We are not sinners. We are his beloved children. And if we will work in harmony with his laws, with our consciousness only upon him, day and night, serving him, loving him, in everything we do, in every form we meet, our lives will not be stale. They will not be failures. We will not be put upon. We will live in the glory and the radiance and the splendor of his perfect being. Let us pray to him. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for thee. I kneel in adoration at thy feet and surrender myself to thee. I feel the power of thy perfection surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence are radiant with thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss
My soul is filled with the ecstasy
of my communion with thee. I and my Father
are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am he.
Blessed Spirit, I am he.
O Heavenly Father,
open
my eyes that I may see thy face.
Open my eyes that I may see thy face.
Open my ears that I may hear thy footsteps everywhere.
Open my ears that I may hear thy footsteps everywhere.
Open my heart that I may feel the glory of thy love.
Open my heart that I may feel the glory of thy love.
O Heavenly Father.
O Heavenly Father.
May thy love shine forever.
May thy love shine forever.
Upon the sanctuary of my devotion.
Upon the sanctuary of my devotion.
May I be able to awaken all hearts with my own.
May I be able to awaken all hearts with my own.
And bring them to thee.
And bring them to thee.
Oh.